Ladies and gentlemen, reindeer and elves,
ghouls,
more inclusive one.
Ghouls and goblins,
dreidels and menorahs.
menorah Suzuki's, eh?
Oh man, that would be a great gimmick. Welcome to a very special holiday edition of Stone Cold Shots, the professional wrestling podcast where the shots are cold and the takes are hot. Every episode here, every 2 weeks, we rate, review, recap a professional wrestling pape or pay-per-view. Today, why don't you guys introduce yourselves, tell the members of the Stone Cold Shots universe who you are. And, you know, I don't think there are enough holiday-themed pay-per-views. You know, we had a hard time coming up with something to watch. There's a long legacy of Halloween Havocs, you know, Great American Bashes for your 4th of Julys. There's even a St. Valentine's Day Massacre. There's only one December to Dismember, you know? Mm-hmm. So why don't you guys pitch, just give me another holiday pay-per-view that, you know, WWE or AEW, or when Ring of Honor comes back, you know, their comeback could be this special Yuletide holiday pay-per-view name.
Very good, very good. I'm the internet darling, Josh Felix Pryor. I'm all decked out in my festive gear over here. I've got my Christmas tree up in the background. I got my garland hanging, mistletoe for me and Gladys to kiss under, as you can see.
It's beautiful,
you know,
over there.
You know, it's really capturing the spirit of the holidays in this apartment. So, you know, listeners, I wish you could see kind of the over-the-top setup I have here. But I, you know, for me, if I were to see something, and again, I'm big on alliteration, I'm big on wordplay. You know, I think jingle hell in a cell. So is that good?
Okay, like jingle bells.
Yeah,
like jingle hell in a cells.
Yeah, jingle hells in a cells. Would that be better?
Jingle hell in a cell, Batman smell in a cells.
That's right. That's the only one I can think of off the top of my head. Slay.
I like that one. I like that.
I think there's something probably with Slay in there too that you could probably do a good one with. But anyway, that's all I got for now. That would be my addition to the ether of holiday wrestling specials, extravaganzas, if you will.
I love it.
Yeah.
My name's Lauren. I'm a regular darling. The first thing that came to my mind when you said a holiday special, and I wasn't sure if you meant specifically a December holiday, so the first thing that came into my mind was Groundhog's Day.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah. Okay.
And I was trying to figure out whether that means that the matches would never end or they would just begin over and over again, like if like there was constantly some sort of authority figure coming out and being like, no, that's no good, start it over or something, or if it would have to be like a pape that was exclusively like feuds that we had seen before, like Randy Orton and John Cena or whatever, like just like shit that we've already seen before.
Groundhog Day is like every Raw to pretty much Shay. Hey,
yeah.
Raw every week. We already got that pay-per-view going on.
It's a pay-per-view where every match is an hour-long Iron Man match.
But if you want it to be December specific, we could just do like some sort of, I like Josh's idea of working a sleigh, and we could just do like an ambulance match, but instead of an ambulance, it's like you got to load somebody up in a sleigh.
Okay.
Jingle
like
all the
that.
Sleigh.
Or like instead of a coffin match, you have to like put them in Santa's big sack and like tighten the drawstring and like send them away on the sleigh or something.
Love it.
Yeah.
it's like there's some kind of like alliteration there where you could have somebody like get fired. So if they get sacked, you know, like it's like.
Oh, yeah.
Of course, I am nobody's darling. I'm your heel host, Campbell Falconer. I had a couple, so I'm gonna say them both and gauge the reaction, and then I'm just gonna edit it for whichever one has a better reaction.
I have two. Yeah. You can do two.
So I like you know, like WWE CW presents Seasons Beatings.
Is there any theme beyond just the name or no?
Oh, it just everything would be like holiday themed.
Okay.
You know?
Okay.
So my computer froze. It's not that I didn't have a reaction to that.
Okay.
So I have no idea what you said. So
I
please.
I said WWE CW presents Seasons Beatings.
Okay. I like that. Not bad.
You know?
Yeah, pretty good.
And the other one that I had was, I don't know why, both of these just sound like bad WWE ECW kind of like pay-per-views to me. Is that was kind of the vibe that I was going for. So the other one was going to be Wreck the Halls.
Okay.
I like that one better.
Wreck the Halls, yeah. Wreck the Halls is pretty good, but it'd have to be in like a bingo hall or something, like an ECW bingo
hall.
Oh,
yeah, like a PWG, Wreck the Halls, or like a... Yeah, GCW could do a Wreck the Halls, right?
1,000%. They probably listen to this podcast, and
they're probably doing a Wreck the Halls right now. So yeah, having kind of a lack of specifically holiday themed professional wrestling pay per views to go back and watch, we decided to it's the 10-year anniversary of TLC 2011, which I think was kind of the I don't know, Josh, like this, when I was like looking up December pay-per-views to do, this made a lot of lists of like great December pay-per-views. And I think is sort of a seminal moment, or could have been a very seminal moment in sort of ushering in a new era of WWE, not to jump like ahead too much, but like based on sort of championships and outcomes of a lot of the matches here tonight. This would have been right after the Summer of Punk. Do you remember watching this in 2011, 10 years ago on this very night?
sure do. What was I doing 10 years ago? I think I had just moved to Toronto. I had a full head of hair. World was my oyster. I remember watching this. And yeah, like it was nice because it felt like the WWE was like rewarding the fans that actually cared about certain individuals, right? And again, like not to get too far ahead, but like, you know, Zack Ryder was really popular at the time, right? He had the True mm-hmm. Island, you know, IZ stories online, and they were getting over pretty well. And then obviously with Punk kind of having the run he was having, and you know, we'll get into the other stuff later, but there was just a lot of hope, you know, at this point 10 years ago. And it's interesting to kind of watch this and be like, holy shit, this was 10 years ago. Because they took such a left turn about really not liking the fans at some point, you know, between...
I think that was about 9 years and 11 months ago.
But it's wild, you know, like, and then... I don't know, like, you just to like, kind of look back and say, that was a fucking decade ago. Just, you want to feel old, eh? You want to feel old. TLC 2011 was 10 years ago.
Yeah, so, like, let's get into it. Yeah. We got, it opens with a nice little, it's not technically holiday themed, it's tables, ladders, and chairs, but we do get a little Night Before Christmas intro video package.
I loved this.
It was very cute, right?
They like reworked all of the rhymes from 'Twas the Night Before Christmas.
The only thing that I remember was somebody saying, not even John Cena.
Yeah. It was really cute. I thought it was really well done, well written.
Yeah, they definitely shoehorned some rhymes into that. I wish I had some of them written down, but I thought it was pretty cute. I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah. Arose such a tables, ladders, and chairs.
It was way better than that.
Yeah. Our first match. So Josh, you weren't jumping too far ahead here. You weren't jumping ahead very much at all. We have Zack Ryder versus Dolph Ziggler with Vicky Guerrero for the United States Championship.
Hell yeah! This is again also wild to see Dolph Ziggler and how little his gimmicks changed in the last decade.
Yeah,
like he literally looks almost exactly the same and is doing essentially the exact same thing he was a decade ago.
I think it's the same for a bunch of the people we see tonight are pretty much the same.
Huh?
Like sure. Dolph Ziggler, Big Show, Randy Orton, Sheamus,
mm-hmm.
all those people.
It wasn't a slight on Dolph Ziggler. It's just like he seems to be stuck in some kind of vortex, some WWE vortex where nothing has changed.
Maybe a Groundhog's Day.
Oh, okay, full circle. I like this.
it's a real testament to the longevity of Dolph Ziggler's gimmick, right? That's what you're trying to say.
Sure, let's go with that.
Vicky, first off, Zack Ryder is just like over as fuck. Like the crowd is going nuts.
I think he looks unrecognizable.
Really?
He looked so weird to me. I know he's like much younger and he had sort of like blondish hair in mm-hmm. this era. I thought he looked completely different.
Do you think it's the beard?
Maybe. I think also dark hair really changes his whole face. I think he looks way better now. But mm-hmm. yeah.
As the deathmatch king.
Exactly.
Who, like, man, on a scale of like 1 to 10, like, you know, 1 being Sheamus still working for WWE, 10 being Cody Rhodes leaving WWE and starting AEW, how fucking unexpected is, like, 10 years ago, how, if I told you, like, oh, Zack Ryder leaves WWE and starts doing deathmatch wrestling, like, you know, like, where does that, that's got to be like a 9.9 on that scale.
I think that's an 11. I mean, for not only for him to be like doing deathmatch wrestling, but to be the biggest heel in a deathmatch wrestling company, like a really good, fantastic heel in a deathmatch wrestling company. And like, kind of like he's, I, if you look at the indies right now, you know, who's bigger than Zack Ryder? I don't know.
Yeah. Vicky Guerrero is also here, and I feel like this really illustrated to me how like underutilized or misused she's being in AEW right now.
Mm-hmm.
I think pairing her up with Nyla Rose is like, I don't know, like Vicky works so well for like a shit heel, like an annoying heel that you like, but like pairing her up with Nyla, who's like a monster heel, doesn't really work in that way.
Vicky doesn't work as like an ominous, imposing, intimidating presence.
Yeah,
she works better as being irritating and loud and boisterous, which just like wouldn't super work with Nyla. It could work, like she could do that. I feel like she might be like taking a step back.
It's two different types of heeldom that are kind of pulling against each other, where you can't take either seriously.
Who else is she just with Nyla or?
Yeah, more or less.
Okay. Yeah, I still think she could do it. I think she's choosing not to do the screaming as much.
Nah.
Well, she was with El Idolo there, right, for a little bit. Like, I think like a week
ago. Oh, yeah.
Right? And then they broke that up. So I think they were trying to find something for her. But like, the problem with Nyla is like, she's really not doing, she's not having many matches on Rampage.
Yeah.
And maybe they're doing more on Darker Elevation, and you know, I'm not watching that as much, but you know, yeah, it's weird to kind of see this because she was such a heat seeker with Dolph here, and the crowd was super, super like nuclear towards her, right?
Yeah,
super hot crowd. You got like a wicked over babyface, a like nuclear heat heel, and both of these guys put on like a really fun curtain jerker match, you know, like
totally.
it wasn't too long. It wasn't too short. It was just right. It was exciting. It wasn't the most like insane technical fucking, and it wasn't the like grandest feat of storytelling, but they knew what their spot on the card was. They knew they had everything kind of going for them. And I thought they did everything pretty much perfectly. This was about as good as this match could possibly have been for me.
Totally. And, you know, watching this, you know, seeing Dolph kind of work and like the style that he does so well, you always forget how good Dolph Ziggler is at selling stuff. And like Zack Ryder was so hot and so over with the crowd, right? And they were just like, every time, like, you know, Zack hit Dolph with something, like Dolph would sell like crazy. The crowd would go crazy. And like just everybody was totally work in this match. I think you said it right, where as best they could, right? They put on the best match that these two could have, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, and there was just the right amount of like heely shit worked in there. Like Dolph was doing crunches for one
of his
holds.
Oh, that was so good. Yeah.
Holds.
Yeah.
And like they had a little teaser moment of Vicky like raises Dolph's foot to the ropes to break a pin, and the ref sees and she gets ejected, and that's makes the crowd very happy.
Yeah. It was super fun. And the right guy won. Like Zack Ryder wins the title.
Everyone was so excited. Especially Zack Ryder's dad is in the audience, and he looks so proud and so excited for his boy.
Oh,
it's really cute.
Nice feel.
How many bald heads you give it?
I gave this one 3 1/3 bald heads. So, you know, it was a little bit better than average. I thought these two put on a pretty good opener, and I don't know. Like, I think they kind of set the pace for the rest of the show. Like, this is a good kind of like feel good moment for the audience. And again, it's so counterintuitive for WWE to do things that really reward the crowd for liking somebody genuinely. not to shit on WWE too much, but no, it was good. And like, again, like this is like the kind of momentum, because Zack Ryder, in my memory, was the first person other than kind of Punk, and not even that, but like the crowd totally organically got behind, and that was made like, because he was like truly like just a main event wrestler, right? Like, and then he started posting the YouTube videos, and then like the crowd went nuts for him, and they would chant his name like at house shows, and like, you know, every time there was a Raw, you know, Zack Ryder chants would be popping out. So this was really rewarding as a fan who kind of like had his back. It's like, no, this is our guy, like make this guy the champion. And they did it, and it was awesome. It was a nice moment, right?
Yeah. Next up, we got a little backstage interview with Booker T and Alicia Fox.
Hell yeah, Alicia Fox.
That's Noam Dar's only lasting legacy in WWE, as far as I'm concerned.
But it was so good. It was so good.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
The whole thing was great. I think they cut the legs out of that too soon, as far as I'm concerned.
So Booker T's being interviewed again about his upcoming match, and then Cody blindsides him and beats the shit out of him.
Man,
Cody, what a great heel, huh?
Yep.
I think he is.
More on that later.
Yeah, I have stuff to say.
This
it's
is almost
like they should really run with him being a heel. In general.
Maybe.
I don't know.
The next segment is like almost the high spot of the entire babe for me,
God.
Which was the fucking Slim Jims for the troops ad.
So strange.
Yeah.
Rey Mysterio.
And the Big Show are like being like, for every 2 Slim Jims you buy, they send 1 to American soldiers. Josh, you ever get any Slim Jims while you were in Iraq?
Sure did. We always had a good supply of Slim Jims at the old DFAC, so it's dining facility.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I'm sure every time you unwrapped a Slim Jim, you prayed to WWE and thanks in gratitude for the Slim Jim.
Now, would you say that each Slim Jim that you ate that was donated to those troops was stolen valor?
I'd staple them to my shirt and wear them around like medals.
Our next actual match, we've got Kofi Kingston and Evan Bourne, Team Airborne. Versus...
was it Airborne?
Yes.
Air Boom.
Josh is... okay.
Or, sorry, Air Boom.
I was like... yeah. I thought I was losing my mind. Okay.
Versus Primo and Epico with Rosa Mendez for the tag team championships.
Oh, that wasn't
Who is
Thunder
this
Rosa?
Man, Evan Bourne?
Rosa Mendez. Thunder Rosa Mendez.
I almost wrote Ava Mendez. actress.
So Evan Bourne is Matt Sydal on AEW of the Sydal brothers.
Oh, wow.
The yoga guys.
Yeah.
So Evan Bourne left, like he broke his foot in WWE, like not a long time after this, but he left WWE and he went on the indies and he started wrestling and he tag team with Ricochet, and he was very famous for being, they were going to Tokyo to wrestle for New Japan in the lead up to one of the Tokyo Dome shows, and Matt Sydal was arrested crossing the border with like a bunch of weed and got thrown in Japanese jail.
Jesus.
And was subsequently fired from New Japan Pro Wrestling because they're very strict about weed in Japan.
Whoa, so. Okay.
I think he also had a wellness in WWE for weed, yes, as well, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now he exclusively wrestles in Colorado. they should rename their basketball team to the Denver Nugs.
The Denver Juicy Nugs.
Anyway, it takes Jerry the King Lawler a solid 0.5 of a second to start talking about Rosa Mendez.
Yeah, it's gross. And it's just the whole match, yeah.
Well, yeah, like, I don't know. Every time I go back and I listen to Lawler on commentary, I'm like, I really have to take... And, like, Lawler was the face commentator, too.
Yeah, that was very confusing.
That was confusing for me. Like, I think it first shows its face, like, when it's, I think, in the Dolph Ziggler-Zack Ryder match, and Michael Cole is, like, really upset when Zack Ryder wins.
Yeah.
And I was so confused at that point, and it wasn't until this next match here where I was like, oh, I get it. Like, Jerry is a face?
Yeah. Jerry the King Lawler is your face commentator. Now let's listen to him fucking slobber all over a woman for... the entirety of this match. Yeah.
But it's super weird. And Michael Cole was like a terrible heel commentator. Like, because it's like, he just took like these weird cheap shots and like nothing really good. But he would just like, he'd be incessant, right? Like he'd just be like over and over, just kind of drilling on a point. And it would just
distract like
from the match, right?
Yeah. He's like the guy at like a roast who is just mean and not funny.
Yeah.
You know, like it's like if when you're at a roast or when you're the heel commentator, like a Bobby the Brain Heenan or fucking like whoever, you can pretty much get away with saying whatever you want as long as it's funny, or like in wrestling, as long as it like contributes to the story.
Sure.
Like the bar is set very high for like, you know, like where the line is to cross, but you, with the caveat that it has to be funny or it has to be entertaining. And Michael Cole is just like all viciousness, no heart. Like,
well, totally. And like, if you think about it, like him being a heel commentator, and like, this is not even the worst of his heel work, right? Like he was like a little annoying tonight, but it's like, there was a point there was like, I think a year or 2 years where every week, and he would just be putting himself over, he'd be talking all match about, like, you know, like, burying everybody, and, like, just nonstop shit, and, like, it's putting Michael Cole over, or trying to put Michael Cole over, or build him up as a heel, but there's no payoff to it, really, and the only payoff we got was him versus Jerry Lawler in the, like, a 30-minute match at a WrestleMania.
That what?
Was completely fucking terrible.
Oh my god.
And then Vince wised up.
Yeah.
Vince wised up and he was like, "All right, the only thing that you're ever allowed to say on commentary again is, oh my."
Well, it took Jerry Lawler having a heart attack on air to turn Michael Cole face. Like that's, I think it was right after that Michael Cole did the face turn and he was a normal commentator again.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Kofi and Evan Bourne, I thought, looked really, really great. This really showcased like the best of kind of like what both of those dudes do. But Primo and Epico could have been like any other tag team. Like it just completely, they were dudes. Like it was almost a squash match, in a sense.
It was really fast, yeah. And yeah, Primo and Epico didn't really get moments. They didn't really get a chance to shine. Like it was all about. I thought it was mainly Kofi Kingston.
Mm-hmm.
He gets the hot tag. He like is the one who comes in with all the energy and does all the cool moves. I will say everyone got a chance, I think, to do a really fantastic drop kick, like a really high drop kick. But other than that,
kudos to everybody in the match for getting their drop kick in, because you usually don't see that. So. Yeah, I don't think, I think you two pretty much nailed everything. I mean, this is, you know, it's fine. Yeah, the Primo and Epico, the team there, they're always pretty curious because you could tell they're like good workers, right? But they never mm-hmm. did anything. And they always have this natural kind of charisma. And it was always disappointing to me that they never got Carlito into that. And they did some kind of like three-way group with the team and it, like yeah. had a run kind of doing that. Because I think with like a really good like kind of like figurehead, like a Roman Reigns kind of to their group, that they could have been something like a good mid-card stable, but they never really got off the ground with much until they got obviously El Torito, and they had that huge run that they had with the Bull,
Los Matadores.
Oh yes.
not even my favorite gimmick for them, honestly. I was a huge stan for the Shining Stars.
Sure.
Oh
fucking,
my god.
When they were fucking like sleazy timeshare salesmen, that gimmick fucking killed me.
2.3.
Yeah. Oh, it was so good. They're fucking handing out brochures and shit. That was great.
Like standing in front of a green screen.
Yeah.
It was great.
Air Boom. Retains.
What a dumb name.
Fucking sick finish though. Good super finish. Hot finish.
Yeah,
really really like that.
Was that the booty drop?
It was. So like Kingston hits the boom drop, Evan goes up to like the top rope and does this like huge dive to the outside, and then Kofi hits the Trouble in Paradise.
I don't think it was a huge dive outside. I think I remember that. I don't know if it was that specific one, but there was a point where everyone was like, oh my god, Evan Bourne.
Oh yeah.
Outrageous. And he was jumping from the top turnbuckle down to the floor, but he did it in such a like safe little like just nice little jump down with his legs like with his body completely straight, basically, and his arms sort of.
It was like, just a body dive, like a straight like.
Yeah.
Like it wasn't a shooting star press, but it was still, you know. It was.
It's exactly how I would have jumped off the top turnbuckle, which yeah, I never like, expect a wrestler to see.
Lauren nailed this, right? Like, I don't want to see Evan board, you know, the eagle of the sky or whatever he's called, right? And then he goes up and they're building it up. It's like, here he goes. And then he just jumps on somebody like Lauren, myself, Campbell. I don't know about you if you'd throw in some kind of twirly bird in there, but. That's how we jump on, just like flat, straight. You want some kind of flippy dude. Like you want some kind of shooting star press or, you know, a corkscrew kind of whatever. And I'm with Lauren on this one. I remember the build up for that. It was pretty funny.
Yeah.
How many bald heads you give the match overall? I'm assuming this lack of flippy dude knocked it down a half bald head at least.
Well, listen, this is perfectly serviceable as far as I'm concerned. This was a 3 bald head matchup, fine match. Yep. It was whatever. And then again, if he would have done a flippy do, who knows? Sky's the limit.
Beautiful. We get Josh Matthews backstage. Boy, if there was ever a guy who deserved to be in Impact Wrestling, it's.
Woo. Oh boy, this segment did not age well. 10 years, eh? 10 years ago, huh?
What? Which one are you talking about?
He's giving us like the update on Booker T's health.
Yeah. What? What was so bad about it? I don't remember. All I remember was that they said Booker T might not be able to fight.
Well, then they had Teddy Long. And,
this Horns. Is a different. Oh, that's segment. A different.
Yeah, you're jumping ahead here, Josh.
Oh, well, I have that next. Am I thinking of something else?
Well, what was so upsetting about this man? Why are you so angry about this man?
Oh, I just think Josh Matthews was like is like a kind of forgettable, bad at his job guy, and like he's in Impact doing like kind of the same like boring job, like he's just. Let me rephrase this. I think that Josh Matthews is like, in the same way where it's like, oh, what's whoever doing in the Impact Zone? Or like when like someone like a EC3 makes it to WWE and you're like, yeah, that guy's going to go to Impact. Josh Matthews is like the announcer version of that, or like the backstage version of that. And he's right where he should be, selling DVDs of Bound for Glory on Impact Wrestling pay-per-views, you know?
I've never been a big Josh Matthews fan, if I'm being honest. And I think they did try to do a similar thing with him that they're doing with Michael Cole around this era, where in Impact they had like a heel announcer, like where his whole thing that he was a Twitter troll, and like his entrance video was a bunch of angry face emojis that were just like flying on the screen. And I don't know, again, anytime they get too cute with it, like it's just like
He's always been the like the Matt Stryker we have at home, you know, like from a commentary perspective.
Sure.
So now we get to the segment that didn't age well, which was Teddy Claus and Hornswoggle. The only notes that I have written down here are matured testes and Rosetta Stone Ebonics. So
Rosetta Stone Ebonics is so fucking funny. I know it's like real, not great, but like I was cackling when I saw that. I couldn't believe.
I also thought this segment was pretty funny. Like it was definitely a thing where it's just like, this is such a pure 10 years ago segment.
Yeah.
But I was watching it and I was like, this is so lightly problematic that it's like kind of still funny to me, you know. Like
I mean, whatever. I mean, I like, for me, like I was watching this and it's like, what did Hornswoggle say? Something around like the lines of like, Santa doesn't look like you in my neighborhood or something like that to Teddy Long.
He says Santa Claus wasn't black, and Teddy Long says, let me just tell you that there was no big fat white man coming to my neighborhood at Christmas
or something like that.
And at one point, Teddy Long says, "Hello there, little boy." And Hornswoggle says, "Little boy, I'm a grown man. I have a beard. Yeah. I have matured testes."
Jesus Christ. This has, like, the skit had Vince McMahon written all fucking over it. Like, Thad, if this is not a Vince McMahon skit, I will never watch pro wrestling again. I will.
This was either written by Vince McMahon or like Goldmember era Mike Myers. Next match, we've got Randy Orton versus Wade Barrett in a tables match, in an I am the tables match. Is that anything?
Yeah, you know, Macho Mania, shout out.
Yeah.
Orton is exactly the same.
Has not changed at all.
Except he's got a goatee now, I think. I feel like you can throw this Orton on Raw today or vice versa. It'd be like, yeah, that's the same guy. That's no problems there.
No.
10 years, the man hasn't aged a bit.
Yeah, the only thing I will say is that I could tell that he was actually still excited about his career at this point, and he was still having fun with his character, and like he was really reveling in like being creepy to the crowd. Like he was doing a lot of mugging to the crowd, and like really, he seemed to be really enjoying like punishing and like just fighting and being weird. And I was like, Randy Orton has so much charisma when he wants to turn it on. Like he is so much fun to watch, and all of that, like he only turns that on sometimes now.
We get like 2011 Randy Orton like once a year now.
Yeah. And it has to be for a storyline.
Like Randy Orton now for me is like, I like this Randy Orton more than I like 2011. I do.
This whole thing that they're doing, the RK-Bro is a lot of fun. Like I'll give them that. Like that's really good.
But like this kind of like
I guess like visually I like Randy Orton a lot better now, but like I think that
like the kind of like, you know, like Murdaugh and Riggs kind of deal, you know. It's like, I don't know. I love this Randy Orton. He's so good at what he does, and he's such a pro, and he's still like so crisp in the ring. I'm a big Orton guy these days, and I wasn't so big back in 2011.
Well, there is that picture of you very unenthusiastically doing the Randy Orton hands when you met him.
Yeah.
He didn't give me a good impression that night, or my girlfriend at the time.
Wade Barrett has the most orange thighs on the planet when he comes out. And he's got his like t-shirt and trunks look, which is always the funniest fucking look. But like he was like Oompa Loompa fucking orange from the crotch down. Like,
I did not notice that. That's really funny.
Also, you know what? Like, Wade Barrett, How come this guy never had a stable called the Privateers, huh? What the fuck are we even doing?
Oh my god.
God damn.
That's good.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, okay, okay. Yeah, I'm just a side note here, quick. How, like, Wade Barrett's fucking huge, and I forgot how big Wade Barrett is.
He's fucking massive.
He was towering over Randy Orton. I'm like, holy shit. And he was a baby face. Like not a good guy, but he had this big, like, beautiful baby face. And, you know, he looked so young. And you know, he kind of like, but it's like, oh, man, this guy, why wasn't this guy the fucking champ, though, at some point? Like, they should have gave this guy a fucking title run. This guy looked like $1 million.
He's great. I love Wade Barrett. Great charisma, too.
Yeah.
Fantastic commentator.
Oh, yeah.
Love this guy doing anything that he wants to do. I'll watch him read the phone book. I'll watch him wrestle the phone book. I'll watch him. I know that this is kind of like, this is around the era of like Wade Barrett had been like leading the Nexus, and then the Nexus got their ass beat by John Cena, right?
Yep.
And then this is kind of just like another L for Wade Barrett that he like didn't really need to take against like an already established guy. I know a lot of people have complaints about the way that Barrett was booked, but I thought this match in a vacuum, going back and just watching it on its own, I liked this match a lot. And I don't usually like matches with dumb stipulations like a tables match. But like I thought this was a lot of fun. I thought both these guys worked really well together. And again, like the crowd was like fucking red hot, super behind Orton.
Yeah.
They used the space well. Like, they did a lot of different spots, I felt like. I didn't get bored at any point. Or, like, I didn't think that they awkwardly took time to, like, set shit up too much. Like, especially the first, I would say, like, 10 minutes, maybe less of the match was them on the outside of the ring doing weird stuff where, like, one of them was sort of trying to get a table in and then the other guy would, like, jump and kick it and it would hit them in the head or whatever. Like, there were so many of those things, which I don't see super, super often. More often you just get someone throwing people into a table or, like, hitting them with a table or whatever. But
this also had a spot that I've never seen before where Wade Barrett goes to set up a table, tries to throw Orton through it. Orton reverses, tries to throw Wade Barrett through the table, and Barrett just kicks the fucking table over so that he can't be thrown through it.
Yeah.
I was like, that's great. Genius.
So smart.
Yeah.
What? Like, the only thing I could think this entire match was, how good are these two fucking guys? Both of them. Like, transitions, they're doing things in the match that made sense. You know, there was no awkward stutters or missteps or anything. They both just like kind of like they went with something. And if Orton's leg got caught on something, Barrett would take advantage. Or if a table didn't do something right, you know, whatever. Like, the other person would take advantage of something situationally that would pop up in the match. And I was like, that's so smart and that's so smooth. And it doesn't matter. It's like, okay, it's your turn. Okay, it's your turn. Because sometimes in a wrestling match, you can very much feel like a game of ping pong where it's like, this is my turn. This is your turn. They just kind of went with the flow and they're both so smooth within the match. It's a goddamn shame Barrett didn't have a proper run with the title, but both guys are amazing.
Totally. They worked really well together. I loved the finish of this match.
Beautiful. Beautiful, yeah. Like, perfect.
Yeah, so Wade is setting Randy up on a table. He's going to jump from the top turnbuckle down onto the table, put Randy through the table. As he is midair, Randy, playing possum, he jumps up, he RKOs him through the table as he's coming down.
Yeah.
Beautiful, beautiful. Could have gone really shitty, but it was beautiful.
How many bald heads?
I gave this one, much like the first match, 3 1/3. I like this match. Great energy. I thought it was a well structured, well put together match. You know, I could have had it go a little bit longer if the stakes were higher. If, like, you know, whatever it is, you know, it could have been bigger than it was. But I thought for what it was, the crowd was great. Both guys were great, and good match.
Yep. No. For anyone listening still wondering at this point, the bald head rating is the gold standard of professional wrestling podcasting rating systems. Mm-hmm. Out of potential five bald heads, never higher.
No, and I also want to point out that no match has ever received the five bald head rating.
An elusive five bald head rating.
Yeah, like, you know, maybe on my deathbed, I'll you know, that's my dream. You know, as I close my eyes for the last time, the match, I hear the bell ringing in the background, and I'm like, five bald heads, and it just comes out of my mouth. But it hasn't happened yet, and I'm not like other... you know, dare I say, hacks online that break my own system, that is, you know, potentially lost their mind online talking about five and six star matches when, you know, the likes of, you know, Bret Hart has never, maybe Bret Hart has, but like Kurt Angle's never got a five star match, you know, for some of these other guys. It's ridiculous. So the bald head rating, true gold standard of wrestling rating system. So
you just wait, man. My hot take for 2022 is that Bron Breakker is going to single-handedly break the bald head rating system.
Oh my God.
You think I'm gonna give him six? here's my commitment right now. If he wins the 2022 Royal Rumble, I will give that match five bald heads.
Amazing.
Oh my God.
If they make him win, I'll give five bald heads.
Man, next up, we're back with Teddy Claus asking the Bella Twins to play some reindeer games with him. And then Jack Swagger comes in, and then Sheamus comes in, and then they do one of my least favorite things of all time, which is making a match mid pay-per-view.
Oh. Yeah. Like, you can get away with this during an episode of NXT. You cannot do this for a pay-per-view. It was so silly.
It sucks so much. And I mean, like, we'll get to that match in a little bit, but
just a side note on this. Sheamus's nickname at this point was Great White. And I just want to say for the record, not the greatest nickname. Just throwing it out there. Just... whatever, yeah. That's a throwaway line. Great White, it's probably not the best one.
We'll call him Great White. His great finishing move will be the final solution.
Okay, all right.
Oh, God.
You always got to take it one step too far, right, Gamble? It's supposed to be our Christmas episode.
I've ruined, especially Christmas. Hanukkah for everybody.
All right. Wrap her up. We're done.
How do you know that was me doing that impression? That could have been Lauren.
That was Lauren. I saw her lips move.
Boo.
Next match, we've got Beth Phoenix versus Kelly Kelly for the Divas title. This is just a real tour de force from one Jerry the King Lawler.
Holy shit, is it ever?
Yeah, poor Kelly Kelly.
Yeah, poor Kelly Kelly. You know what? She actually did a lot better in this match than I...
This match was good. This was a good match. And I was not expecting it to be a good match. Like, honestly.
Me neither.
Because I know Beth Phoenix is good. But, total. You know, everything I remember about Kelly Kelly is that she traditionally did not have the best matches. And I was pleasantly surprised this match.
Same.
Yeah, I do think Beth like kind of carried her for some of it. Like, it's the move set really relies on Beth throwing Kelly Kelly around, or like Kelly Kelly does that thing where she like basically does like a head scissors or whatever, where you like clamp your little ankles on someone's head and that person is holding you and spinning. Like, there were a lot of moves like that where it was like it's actually Beth doing the move, but like I thought Kelly Kelly did do some really good moves, do power moves too, and she had amazing intensity and was screaming the whole time. Like,
the Kelly Kelly like running bulldog to the outside was fucking sick. That was really good. This match was not only better than I expected it, but it was longer. Like, I thought they were gonna get like 2 minutes, you know, and like they actually had it probably, if you go back and look, was probably the shortest match on the card. Like, they probably could have cut like, I don't know, maybe a couple of segments of Teddy Long dressed as Santa Claus, or maybe they could have cut like a Jack Swagger versus Sheamus match. I'm just spitballing here to give this a little bit of extra time, but it was like an adequately length match during a time where I feel like they were still getting the like 3 minute diva spot.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think the reason why is exactly what you said, right? Like they didn't really, you know, they're a few years off from having that era of, you know, giving women's wrestling a chance. And it's too bad because Beth Phoenix, I feel like, you know, you place this Beth Phoenix in this kind of era of wrestling. And she has, you know, barn burners with like Rhea Ripley and, you know, like Bianca Belair. Yep. And like all these great talents. And even at this time, Kelly thrown out there, you know, like she put on a great match. So kudos to both these women. They both killed it.
There was one really, really funny spot in this match where Beth Phoenix starts calling spots louder than any wrestler I've ever heard. I don't know if anyone else caught this. She throws Kelly in a submission and looks up at the ref and starts screaming, "How much time do we have? How much time do we have?
I heard her
do
say that.
Do we have any time left?"
I heard That's her say, bad. "How much time do we have?" And I actually thought that she was like, I literally was trying to make sense of it in my mind of like, she's talking about the hold. Like I was like,
and then she said, "Okay, Kelly, power out."
Wow. I didn't know. Kelly set up.
And then she started running at Kelly, and then she said, "Okay, Kelly, roll up, go, go, go." And I was like, damn. usually I don't catch these. And it was like, sure. You know, it was so loud. You know, she was born to do commentary on NXT. She was great at that.
Wow.
So yeah, Beth Phoenix does retain the Divas title. I think probably rightly so. You know, legend, absolute ledge. How many bald heads you give this one?
Just based on timing and what they got in, I gave it 3 bald heads. You know, I thought it was good. I would have liked to see another 5 minutes on this match, if I'm being honest.
Yeah.
So.
We got Alberto Del Rio, and his butler driver,
Ricardo Rodriguez.
There you go.
I think it's a running joke in my notes with me and myself that every time that we see Rodrigo, I refer to him as something different. Like here I call him a servant, later I call him a chauffeur, and then later I call him an announcer.
We get The Miz coming by to talk to him about how they're not going to work together to beat CM Punk anymore. It's now every man for himself, setting the groundwork for the main event.
Our alliance is dead.
Yeah.
And then
some fucking weird thing with Santino Marello.
Oh.
What
are you talking about? I was going to
Booker T getting attacked by Cody again, this time on the ramp.
Well, yeah. Booker T comes out to the ring for a match
against Cody.
And Cody runs out and attacks him. And then they just sort of, they're just like, well, that's done. Yeah. That's done now.
This was weird. And I don't know, like, so, like, Booker getting attacked, and then, like, you know, Cody attacking him, Booker getting up, and he just kind of walked to the back on his own kind of accord, and he looked fine. Like, there was no, like,
yeah,
stretcher taking him out of there. It wasn't, like, an oversell. He was just kind of, like, the doctor's like, no, you got to come to the back and get checked out. And then Booker just got up on his own and walked to the back. Like, you feel like something like that, especially if it's, like, a baby face, you'd be like, no, I'm going to go to the ring. I'm going to have this match, yada, yada, yada. If I'm going
to
see a baby,
I was waiting for him to do that.
It's like, right? they wrote themselves into a corner by like, they were like, oh, he needs to get attacked bad enough that the match can't happen right now, but not so bad that the match can't happen at all later.
But I don't understand why, like, they had to have the match theoretically happen at that point.
Yeah,
like, why doesn't he
just
get
not done
attacked?
That segment.
He could have just gotten attacked again backstage.
Sure. Or it's like Cody already attacked him backstage. You don't need to do the exact same segment twice. This didn't.
Yeah.
The fact that Cody came out and attacked him again didn't really like heighten the stakes at all for me, you know?
And again, Booker doesn't look like a strong baby face that's fighting through it. And it also doesn't give him an out for losing the match against Cody, potentially, right? Like,
yeah.
Because, like, if he goes in kind of hurt and he's battling against the odds, but he's just too hurt to kind of overcome Cody, you know, like, I feel like the storytelling's not really there. And it's like, I think it's like, if they would have had that match on maybe Raw and then Booker T came out, he's taped up a little bit and he's kind of like, you know, like kind of got the wobbled wheel, you know, kind of thing going. I think that would have been better, but I don't know. It played out how it played out, and we'll see how that goes later in the night.
Yeah.
Next up, we have the most confusing wrestling match I've ever watched in my life.
Well, really? So the package happens.
The package happens, and the main clear thing that I remember from the package is Triple H firing Kevin Nash.
Yeah.
Yeah, and my main takeaway is Nash is disappointed in Triple H and said he went from being a friend to being my boss.
Yeah.
That was a great one-line, like, takeaway for
and he's
me.
Like, he's like, it's not personal, it's all business. Like, yeah. It's kind of the storyline they're running with. But then when Triple H comes out, he's over as fuck.
Well, Kevin Nash hits Triple H with a sledgehammer from behind and hospitalizes him like a couple weeks prior, like
right,
in the
yeah.
package.
Which is like why this is a sledgehammer match.
Yes. I was wondering, A, if Triple H had always been a sledgehammerman.
Yes.
And so then, I don't know, it seemed like this was almost like the birth of the gimmick in a way. And I was like, well, why? It's weird to me that like, this would always have been a sledgehammer match because it's Triple H. I was just like, I don't get it. And then the other thing, like, I just thought it was hilarious. Like you were saying, it's hard to tell who's the face and who's the heel. The fact that Kevin Nash hospitalized Triple H by hitting him on the back of the head with a sledgehammer, and then he gets taken out on a stretcher in this promo package, Triple H is getting wheeled out, and then Kevin Nash lumbers up to the ambulance with a sledgehammer and attacks him again and starts attacking the people. And it was just like, because for the whole promo package, I was thinking that probably Nash is the babyface. Like, probably Nash is like more sympathetic here.
Traditional babyface move, attacking paramedics with a sledgehammer.
But that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. At that point in the package, I was really confused. And then I get even more confused, as you say, when the match begins and like they're making their entrances and Triple H is so over.
The crowd loves Triple H. And then it's like I was still sort of like reeling from this confusion where I still couldn't remember, like, if Michael Cole was supposed to be a face commentator or a heel commentator. And I just, like, I found it so hard for this match to, like, figure out. I'm like, who am I supposed to want to win here? I knew before this match even started, I knew before the promo package even started that Triple H was going to win this match. But, like, am I supposed to want Triple H to win this match? Josh, do you have any insight at all for us here? Because
I do. I have the inside track on this match. So first of all, Triple H's entrance is always the coolest thing that's ever happened on any wrestling show. And it'll always be the most over thing in the entire universe. And people will always lose their mind because it always looks so cool. Anybody says they hate Triple H's entrance is lying to themselves. They're full of shit. I wish he would still do it today. I wish he would still do it today. You know, bad heart and all. I wish Triple H just come out. We don't need a match. Just do the entrance. Secondly,
it is. It's like a fucking like. It's the most 2 out of 10 Motorhead songs, but like an 11 out of 10 entrance.
Well, yeah. As wrestling entrance songs go, it's definitely in the top 10. Like, it is one of the best wrestling entrance songs for sure.
The whole thing fucking slaps. Slaps the hardest. Okay, fucking so water. Second, the build up to this was Kevin Nash, I believe at SummerSlam the previous year, came back out of the crowd, gave CM Punk the old power bomb, Alberto Del Rio cashed in the Money in the Bank, yada yada yada. He lost the title. CM Punk came out next night on Raw, blamed Triple H. Triple H said, you know, this wasn't me. Kevin Nash said, yeah. Triple H texted me. Yada, yada, yada. So this kind of went on where Triple H was still kind of the good guy, but he was still the boss and he was wearing suits and stuff like that. And then Kevin Nash was universally a piece of shit because he attacked CM Punk. So that dynamic kind of played through over the months where it's like Triple H is like, no, I have nothing to do with this guy. And then eventually it came out that John Laurinaitis maybe messaged Kevin Nash. And, you know, it's like he admitted that Triple H never actually texted him and yada, yada, yada. So going into this, gearing into this, Triple H, authority figure still, but still like a fan favorite, would say things to kind of pound to the crowd. Kevin Nash, universal big piece of shit.
Okay. Confusing still, but okay.
Because then it's still like in the course of the match, right? Like, maybe it's just like that I'm used to seeing Triple H work the way that Triple H works, but like he seems like he works like a heel, right? He's still,
sure.
He's still like working a body part.
Yeah,
He focuses on the knee, which then he puts him in a figure four through a fucking ladder, you know?
So sick.
And then he,
which was
like,
sick. It was sick.
Which kicked ass. It fucking rocked. Don't get me wrong. And then he's like fucking like hitting him in the knee with a fucking sledgehammer and then like, and it, like, not to jump to the finish too much, but it's like he gets Kevin Nash down in this like fucking like super vulnerable position. Kevin Nash looks up very pathetically and tries to do the two sweet, and Triple H brains him with a fucking sledgehammer and wins the match. And then Kevin Nash, the heel of the match, gets taken out in an ambulance. Like, he gets the babyface ambulance spot that Booker T didn't have.
That's because of the history, Campbell. That's because of the history between the two. There's so much buildup. You know, that would be like you healing on me out of nowhere and then me giving you the old coup de grace, you know, and finishing you off, giving you a little double stomp. And, you know, it's like, I don't want to do it, but I have to finish my friend Campbell off so he doesn't attack me again. You know, it'd be one of those situations.
It wasn't a bad match, but it was a long match and it was a little confusing for me. You know?
That's fair. That's fair. And I will also concede to the fact that as great as WWE is at their video packages, they did not do a great video package with this match to really paint a picture of the story, right? They only kind of painted like the, you know, like slightly on the history, a little bit of what happened, and then the fact how this kind of ramped up in the last few weeks.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. I was a little confused about who was face and who was heel, who I was supposed to be cheering for, but I still really liked this match. I thought it was really good. There were some really good spots. One of my favorite spots is when Triple H gets thrown into a table that's set up in the, like, on the top turnbuckle in the corner there. And Nash throws him so hard that he hits the table and goes flying up over the top ring rope and out onto the floor.
That was great.
Just with the momentum of the throw.
Fucking sick. Yeah.
It was crazy. Triple H is a giant man. It was just nuts. The one part that really was weird for me is there's a part where Nash like incapacitates Triple H in some way. I can't remember how specifically, but like in a way where he's down for a bit and everyone knows that. And Kevin Nash just takes the ladder down. He does not climb the ladder. He looks at the ladder, he grabs it and he moves it and like puts it down to the side. And it was just like, what you doing, Kevin Nash? You want to go get that sledgehammer? It was just a nonsensical moment, but
yeah.
I thought it was a pretty good match.
This match is way better than it had any business being, as far as I'm concerned, because Kevin Nash is so old, and he's so kind of like, kind of immobile, and big and kind of sluggish. And again, you know, Kevin Nash back in the day, like, he worked a great big man, but, you know, you could tell he was kind of like, you know, a little aged in this match, and kudos to Triple H for really kind of like getting the best Kevin Nash match that I think he could have got. And again, like it was way better than I thought it was going to be. It kind of blew it out of the water. It wasn't like obviously a mind blowing match by any means, but no, it was a lot of fun. And I think Lauren touched on a lot of good points in this match. I think the body park work by Triple H in this match was pretty good. I like the ending. I know maybe it was a little confusing and contrived for some people, but the fact that, like, you know, he didn't finish him with the pedigree, you know, he hit him with the sledgehammer and he finished him off. I thought that was a pretty good just desserts ending, right?
in the symmetry of getting wheeled away at the end. Yeah,
you got it. So
how many bald heads?
I gave this one also 3 1/3 bald heads. I thought this was a pretty fun match.
Seems to be the running.
Yeah, that's going to be the average.
For the Pape.
I mean, it's not a bad thing. A lot of people tell you 3 1/3 if they see another review site kind of rating it. Oh, that's not great. It's above average.
Huh?
You tell me. You tell me if that's bad. You know, I don't think so.
We go backstage to one Matthew Stryker interviewing CM Punk. I thought this CM Punk promo was fucking great. Like, such a good backstage interview. Yeah. It was like Shades of the Rock with his like impersonations of The Miz. Felt like The Rock. And then there was also like kind of the way that he was talking to Matt Stryker reminded me of like kind of the way that Stone Cold used to talk to Michael Cole. Like, it really was sort of like the two greats of the era a decade before kind of rolled into one for this CM Punk style of promo. I thought it was great. And I mean, Punk, all of his promos now are fucking killing it on Dynamite, on Rampage. Like, that seg that he did with Eddie Kingston, where they were just cutting promos at each other, was like, that was one of my favorite promo segments of the entire year, and I don't think it was as good as the one that we just got with CM Punk and MJF. Like,
right? And he always reminds you why he's the guy that you can count on, right? Like, he's the gold standard for a reason, right? He's so good at whatever promo he's in, and it never comes off as contrived. It always seems like this is really what CM Punk would be saying in the situation. There's none of that kind of corporate glaze over it, you know, the CM Punk donut. He's always like, you know, he's taking shots of Michael Cole, and he's like kind of echoing what the fans are kind of thinking. And every time he does, it just kind of adds to it, right? Because it's like, oh shit, he said the thing. But he's also saying things that are like true and they resonate, and like, this is why I have a problem with this person, or this is what I'm going to do about the problem. And you believe it, and you always believe CM Punk. And I always forget that. And I see a promo like this, and I'm like, yeah, he's the man. CM Punk's always going to be the man.
Yeah, I totally agree with what you're saying, Josh. Like, I loved, like, definitely the Michael Cole comment. Like, he throws shade at a few people in the promo.
Mm-hmm.
The Michael Cole and, like, the Miz and Del Rio comments are all, like, very, they seem like, not cheap shots, but they seem like silly, just kind of, like, giving the crowd what they want. Shots. But then he says the thing about like, oh, at the Slammies I was awarded like best like superstar or whatever,
superstar of the year,
and John Laurinaitis took like got my trophy for me, and that was like disrespectful, and this motherfucker hasn't been in anything like any match worth anything for a long ass time, or like he never was. And I was like, this is a really interesting side to CM Punk, where he's still being edgy and saying what he believes and just like pressing buttons. But this is more of like a character building thing, where the other things were like just him being like, I'm silly, like I'm the favorite, I'm going to poke fun at the heels and make fun of the heels. But this was a thing where it was like, he feels disrespected, and so he's calling this person out who is like an authority figure.
Well, it's like the thing that got him as over as he got was like being the guy with the chip on his shoulder, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, John, I don't like you. I don't, or John, I don't hate you. I even like you, but what I don't like is the idea of you. And like Vince McMahon and John Laurinaitis and glad handed yes men and whatever, da 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 da. And this is just an extension of that for sure, right?
Like, yeah.
Him being the guy with the chip on his shoulder. And so I feel like CM Punk as the guy with the chip on his shoulder was a thing that, correct me if I'm wrong, but like up until pretty much this run that he's having in Dynamite or in AEW right now, you were not really the biggest CM Punk fan. You were kind of,
correct.
You were a little eye-rolly about CM Punk.
Yeah.
Has that changed, and like what has been the deciding factor?
It has definitely changed. I'm not sure if it would change my opinion of him in the past,
mm-hmm.
like his past career, but I do love him now, in his current like AEW iteration, I really love him. And it was a thing where like when we were building up to him returning, I was kind of like, why are we all excited about this? But now that I'm seeing him and he's cutting all these fantastic promos and his storylines are really, really amazing. And like, I think what it was is I hadn't been exposed to in the past. I wasn't exposed to like his promos necessarily. Like for a pod, we would watch him and I would get snippets of his stories or whatever. Right. I've seen the pipe bomb. I get that. But it wasn't like I haven't seen him do a big long story and a big promo thing. And he has so much fucking heart when he's promoing.
Mm-hmm.
And in this, especially in this current iteration of him, I still think he has like a lot of interesting shades of like heelness and like gray areas to him now. But he is so sympathetic and like there's so much heart behind him. And I really, really love him. And he is fantastic at, like, he's just really good at speaking.
I'm interested to see where this goes because I find this Punk really endearing that we're seeing now. And it's like, you can tell he's having a great time and you can tell he kind of loves what he's doing. And it's kind of great to see. And again, like, you know, a lot of people kind of shit on the fact that, you know, it's like he's not in any big feuds and yada, yada, yada. Well, he's just starting this MJF thing and they've had some verbal kind of barbs, right?
But yeah. I don't see why they need to blow CM Punk on like a huge feud right away, especially also because like he's an older dude and like why not just have him fully flesh out the entire roster, right? Like why do we need to blow our load on like fucking the main guy like Kenny Omega or whatever? Well, like,
and it's like the thing is that like any fucking person who is saying why isn't CM Punk in the title feud,
he told you is
exactly the same type of person who like they like any person who is mad that CM Punk isn't in a title picture right now is the type of person who was going to hate this CM Punk run. They had already decided that it was going to be bad. There's somebody who already has decided that they don't like AEW because if you put a 42-year-old man who hasn't wrestled in 7 years in the title picture as soon as he shows up, these exact same type of people are going to be complaining about that. I thought wins and losses were supposed to matter in AEW. Why is CM Punk getting a title shot just because... Like, it's fucking like... People who are complaining about this title run right now aren't... Or not title run. People who are complaining about CM Punk in AEW right now aren't actually fucking watching the product.
What can I say? Maybe they are. But also, something that I've had to take a step back and kind of evaluate is that WWE has trained us in a certain way over the last 20 years, right? They have trained the wrestling fan to get instant payoffs, right? So if we're bringing in Brock Lesnar or The Rock or kind of whoever, they're getting thrown right into the main event scene. So AEW is retraining us how to be wrestling fans, right? Like,
totally.
Kind of like they're changing it. And they're making us wait a year, 2 years. Look at Hangman. Look at all these stories that have like a longer term payoff. And I'm okay with that. And like instinctually, I'm like, why isn't Punk doing more? And this is weird. But I'm still watching week after week, and I'm engaged with what's going on. And now that he finally got to MJF after, you know, months of kind of like different like mini feuds and this and that, I'm like, okay, we got a big one. But then there's also like, you know, there's Adam Cole, there's Hangman, there's Bryan Danielson, there's all these things in the future for Punk. And I think we just got so conditioned to this like instant payoff, this instant. And there's no new matchups in WWE I want to see. There's no two pairings, even at Survivor Series, where it's like the one time of year where SmackDown meets Raw. I've seen all these matches. I've seen all these matches and there's nothing really new that I'm interested in. And it's not until they build new stars and they actually build people up that I will be interested in. And like, I think AEW is doing a fantastic job. And I, you know, I had to check myself on this latest CM Punk run because I was like, why isn't he doing all this? But I think they're doing a great job and he seems like he's having a great time doing it. So.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get back to TLC soon. I promise. But the last thing I want to say is like, I was having a conversation with a friend of mine the other day where he was like, you know, he follows AEW, he watches more or less every week, but he like he was texting me and he was just like, man, why is everybody so excited for this fucking Hook debut? Why is everybody so excited for like for Hook to start wrestling? I was like, because it's exactly what you're talking about, Josh, is that like the way that AEW has trained us as fans that like when something has been built up for a long time, the payoff has been worth it. Yep. Like time and time again in every single one of these instances, these sure. like year long fucking like stories. And so like when they were like, oh yeah, Hook's finally gonna like this guy who's been hanging around the back. It's like the Simpsons bit where Homer's like, but Marge, that little guy in the back hasn't done anything yet. You know, and it's a thing where it's like it's really, really refreshing to watch a live wrestling crowd just like allow themselves to be excited for the payoff of a thing that they've wanted in a way that like when they were like Hook's finally gonna have a match is like I'm like, oh, it's because fucking Taz and fucking Tony Khan and like the company have decided that Hook is in a place where he can finally have his debut match and it won't be disappointing to the fans because they know that they need to give the fans what they want. Or at least give them something to engage us and keep us coming back for more and not just being like, fuck you. It is really refreshing.
If I can fanboy, I'll fanboy over Hook for a second because they played that perfectly. Punk initially called him out. It's like, send me Hook, you know, or send Hook, I think he said.
And then, send Hook.
Send Hook. And then like nothing, right? Like, and then Hook, I think, was like kind of in the background. Maybe he got a couple shots in on Punk. But they didn't do anything with Hook. And then, like, you know, it took Dante Martin turning on the group. And then, like, you know, it's like, you've left me no choice. I have to send Hook this Friday on Rampage. And it was months after, and everybody's like, oh, my God, it's Hook. It was awesome.
And also, he would fucking, like, I love the gimmick of he chews gum for his entire match.
Right.
He's like chewing gum while he's beating the fucking shit out of Fuego del Sol.
Hook could not have been more Hook during that entire match, and it was fucking perfect. It was
so good. All right, we talked about CM Punk and Hook and AEW for way too long. Jack Swagger with Vicky Guerrero and Sheamus have a match for how many bald heads?
This was every Raw match I've ever seen for the last 10 years. Am I wrong on this? This match?
Yeah. No. It was boring. There were no stakes. It didn't need to happen. It was like
it was technically like proficient or like sufficient.
It was fine.
Satisfactory.
I would say.
But it was clear that they were like, oh, this Triple H match is going to be red hot. We need a cool down match, and it was like the Triple H match was fine. And they had a promo segment in between, and then they did this, and I didn't need it to happen. Can we please just skip to Sheamus wins? How many bald heads?
2 2/3.
Perfect.
I mean, but like, honest to God, like, I feel like I've been watching this match for 10 years. Am I wrong? Like,
almost like Groundhog Day?
Almost like a Groundhog Day. And it's Lauren's pay-per-view idea that has the most legs out of all the suggestions we had. So
yeah. I love this like weird little like don't try this at home ad.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
With like, yeah, it was good. Next up, we've got the two best theme songs in WWE history. Mark Henry versus The Big Show for the World Heavyweight title in a chairs match.
Mark Henry has like a little Band-Aid wrapped around his little foot there.
Yeah. It's a pretty big foot, man.
Yeah. There's like, I thought the beginning of this match was so interesting and like intriguing. Because Big Show's clearly very angry, and so he like immediately when the bell rings gets out of the ring and starts tossing like 20 chairs into the ring, very nonchalantly, just like throwing them in one after another. But then Mark Henry just goes to leave the arena, like he's just like done
Mark
with
Henry's
this.
Like, I'm fucking done with this.
Yeah, he literally says that, and then Big Show attacks him outside. And like for some reason, Big Show's quite over.
No.
For some reason, Mark Henry is targeting Big Show's hand specifically, which
so that he can't do the knockout punch. That's his finishing move.
So
yeah, how did
if
you
I
not get
skip
the
ahead?
How did you not get the storytelling in this match?
It's like if Mark Henry was targeting Okada's forearm so he couldn't do the Rainmaker.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. No, I understand the premise of like going for a body part so that someone can't do their signature move. I get that.
Just to reinforce it for you, Lord, this was not a good match. This was not good.
Josh, did you get a count on? Did you get a count on how many moves they used in this match?
I think it's about five if you include swinging a chair.
Yeah, if you count a chair shot, I got two.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
chair shot and punch.
Yep.
Like, that was it.
I never understood Big Show. I never got it. I never got the appeal with Big Show.
Well, he's big.
And he's a Big Show. Yeah. And like he wears a toque and he's bald. And I'm like, do I look like that? Like, do I need to stop wearing a toque? And that's what I think when I watch this. But I'm like, no, I pull it off.
I liked his toque.
I think it should be illegal to talk shit on the Big Show during December because of his line in Jingle All the Way where he says, "I'm gonna deck your halls, bub." And then Arnold Schwarzenegger punches him in the face.
So you think that he's got a free pass for life in December only?
Specifically in December, okay. Yes.
All right.
Man, January 1st to November 30th, you can talk all the shit about Paul White you want. But in this month, not in my house. All right.
Lauren, please go on. Sorry to interrupt, but horse shit.
He targets Big Show's hand, but then it doesn't matter because Big Show is still able to do his big right hand for the win.
Yep.
Short and sweet this one is.
Yep. Big Show gets hit the title. He hasn't had a title in 9 years.
Yeah.
Two bald.
Very exciting. Real...
Two bald heads.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ushering in the new era of WWE champion is the Big Show.
But then we get to the real
there's more.
Fucking shit.
So pretty much the second Big Show wins the match, the crowd starts chanting for Daniel Bryan.
Yeah.
Like immediately they're like, "Well, this can't be it."
Yeah, so then Mark Henry hits Big Show with a chair. Big Show is unconscious, and then the crowd goes nuts.
And then Daniel Bryan comes out.
Yeah.
Cashes in Money in the Bank.
Yep.
Great cash in.
And becomes... And it's a great cash in, and it's like, I love this cash in for, like Bryan grabs it and fucking walks over and starts screaming at Michael Cole.
Yep.
He's like, "Fuck you. You told me I couldn't do it. In your fucking face, you stupid piece of shit." I'm pretty sure he says all of that verbatim. And then it cuts over to the Big Show, who is like looking like he is trying so hard not to smile.
Sure.
Like he is trying so hard not to be happy. And I mean, we've all watched the Big Show. We know exactly how good of an actor Paul White is.
Well, this was interesting. And it's just like this was interesting because a Big Show immediately after Bryan got the three, he was knocked out and then he wasn't knocked out. And got up immediately.
He wakes up.
Like, immediately, and kicks out at 3.5. And then he sits up, like, "Oh, shit, what happened?" And it's like, I'm like, what was that? But also, this was, like, planting the seeds of the Daniel Bryan heel turn, right? So you could tell, he's like, you know, this is for everybody, like, 18 years, or, like, whatever he said, right? Like, you know, the last 12 years that have been following me, yada, yada, yada. But, like, Big Show's like, "Man, fuck this guy." And then, like, he's being so over the top, kind of, like, celebrating about it. It was really interesting to see that kind of, like, heel and face Daniel Bryan all kind of coming out.
Bryan, he really fucking hits the "who do you think you are, I am?" like, when he, you know.
Yeah.
Great reference.
It's cute. It's great. It's a moment. We love it. We stan Bryan Danielson in this house in the month of December and all the other months of the year.
Except February.
And then we get an ad for the WWE Network. It's crazy that the WWE Network didn't even last a decade.
Dude, it was nuts watching this ad for this cool new network and all the cool shit it has. I actually had a moment of being nostalgic for the WWE network, though, watching it. I was like, man, remember when we had access to all that shit?
I had a moment of nostalgia for dubstep.
There was so much dubstep. It was awful.
Wow. Yeah, I signed up the first month I could. I had a legal U.S. address that I used as a post box office that I signed up for the WWE network with, and I had it until they decided that I was no longer eligible to have it when Peacock merged with them. So,
boo.
They don't want my money anymore.
It's fucking, this Peacock shit sucks, man. It's crazy how much they were just like, oh, Canada, fuck Canada. This was like the real Montreal screw job, man.
Totally.
Like,
fuck those guys.
That's okay, honestly, though, because like, fucking, how much WWE are we even watching at this point? Like,
it's true.
Fucking, like, the Peacock thing and the AEW thing could not have happened at a more serendipitous time in my life.
That's true.
Now we get the match we've all been waiting for. Cody versus Booker T for the Intercontinental title. Sure, why not, man? Booker looks great in this match. Like, it's a little clumsy. The overall, like, night of storytelling wasn't great, but, like, Booker, he does the spin-a-rooney, man. He looks in shape. He's fucking killing it. Cody works great as a heel.
Cody works really well as a heel. He's fantastic intensity the whole time. I was so happy watching him. I was like, man, what a great wrestler. What a great performer. He's fucking killing it. I haven't felt like that about Cody Rhodes in like a year or two. Like, I fucking really hate him on AEW, but it was nice to go back and watch this. There's one point that I really liked where he yells, "It's a young man's game and I'm the youngest."
That's great. Yeah. That's so good.
Yeah, I just had some storytelling problems throughout the thread of the night. Like, it's like, why isn't Booker T more injured going into this? Or why, like, you know, why aren't we telling that story? Because, like, he was attacked twice over the course of the night. So why isn't he? But Booker T looked great. Like, he had looked like Booker T when he was WCW champion, right? Like, he looked like he hadn't lost a step. He was in great physical shape. Cody was great in this match. I thought they put together a nice little match, but it didn't make sense truly to me within the context of the rest of the night, you know?
I also thought it was a really weird, I don't know, I've never seen, like, I've definitely seen a Booker T match, or, like, especially tag matches of him, but, like, I don't remember him doing this thing, and I don't know if this is because he was attacked throughout the night tonight, but he does this, like, really vacant expression a lot in this match, where he just stands there and just looks straight ahead, and, like, he takes a long time to, like, do his little spin and stuff. Like, it was, I couldn't tell, like, he was definitely trying to sell injury or some kind of head spaciness, but it was just, it felt really weird, and I felt like it was the same thing that he was doing when they first ushered him to the back when he was attacked on the ramp. He was doing that same vacant facial expression, and I was just like, I don't know, I felt like the vibe was off. Like, if you're gonna sell that he's, like, concussed to me right now, like, I don't know, it's not right. He wouldn't be fighting. I don't know. Yeah.
Cody retains. A couple of disaster kicks, or whatever they call it. Beautiful disaster.
Just a boot to the head.
Great fucking finishing move. Honestly, better than the Crossroads. Like, I think he should bring that back, because it does look fucking cool. How many would this one get?
Give it 3 on the nose. It's fine.
Yeah.
We
got the real match everybody's been waiting for. We got our main event. We got a triple threat match between Alberto Del Rio, The Miz, and CM Punk for the WWE title in a tables, ladders, and chairs match. Hoo boy, man.
Oh my.
Fucking, like, I know Alberto Del Rio, kind of a piece of shit in real life, allegedly. But, like, goddamn, the guy can wrestle. And The Miz is, like, it's so dumb that, like, The Miz is still especially at, like, even at this point in his career, like 10 years ago, the narrative of like, you're just a reality TV star, you're not a fucking real wrestler,
ridiculous.
Or whatever, is like
ridiculous.
Oh man, The Miz is like a fucking like all timer for me, man. Like he's really, really fantastic. And then obviously you got like CM Punk, and like this match was great. I loved this. This, like, I in sort of the annals of history of like great CM Punk WWE matches to check out, no one has ever brought this to my attention before. And I thought this was just excellent.
Great match. This was a great match, and everybody played the roles perfectly, right? So Miz was a great addition to this match, because you could have just had like Del Rio and Punk in there, and they would have had a barn burner, right? Like, they would have had a great match because they're both like really technically proficient in the ring. Miz added that, like, mm-hmm. you know, little je ne sais quoi to the old match, where it was like that sports entertainment quality, where it was like the facials, yeah. and then like that kind of X factor in the match, where he kept on popping up in different situations and being like the spoiler to kind of the Miz and Del Rio's, you know, master plan to get the belt. And I thought he did a great job. And on top of that, Ricardo Rodriguez, great job this match. He really,
oh my God,
suffered for the art, if you will, a few times in this match.
I was shocked when he started climbing the ladder. I was like, oh my God, this man's about to get damaged.
And he did.
Yeah. 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 He did a great job, though. I was impressed.
The ladder.
I wouldn't do that.
The ladder spot. So specifically that ladder spot where he got to the top of the ladder, and then he did like the Hardy Boys, Edge Christian, you know, Dudley Boys spot, where from the top of the ladder, you go over the top rope to a table on the outside. And he, like a lead fucking balloon, crashed so hard. I have the impact of that, and how quickly he fell, like, was like a 300 pound sack of shit through that table. It was ridiculous.
He got damaged one and damaged two. Henry Rollins, eat your heart out on this guy, huh? I like the match overall was great. Everything that you said, Josh, the storytelling, the addition of the Miz. I think that this definitely would have been a worse match if it was just because, like, CM Punk versus Alberto Del Rio in a match on their own, you don't need to make that a triple threat. CM Punk versus Alberto Del Rio in a tables, ladders, and chairs, you do need sort of a third moving part in that.
Yeah.
And the Miz was the perfect addition to that. And like, man, these handcuff spots.
Oh yeah. Great.
Oh my God, I loved it.
Both instances of CM Punk getting handcuffed to the ladder and Alberto Del Rio beating him down and going to climb up the ladder, and then CM Punk fucking kicks the ladder apart to free his hand, wraps the cuffs around his fist, punches Alberto Del Rio is great. And then you have like the Miz fucking coming in being that like opportunistic piece of shit and handcuffing CM Punk to the turnbuckle, and it's like,
motherfucker,
you know, it's at that moment, like, it's that thing where it is that legitimate suspension of disbelief where I was watching this and I was like, I've already seen the picture of who all the champs are coming out of TLC 2011. I know CM Punk retains this, but like literally in that moment when he was being handcuffed to the turnbuckle, I was like, how the fuck is he going to do it?
I don't know how he's going to get out of this. I was like, oh, he's done.
Yeah.
I guess Alberto's going to
win. It's like, yeah, like, oh, this is how they fuck him out of the title, right? Like, yeah. Which is something that they would 100% do.
Yeah. I was like, oh, it's done. Like, unless he fucking breaks the handcuffs, I don't see how he's getting out of this. And then when he starts trying to break the handcuffs, I was like, here we go. And then it didn't work. I was like, oh fuck, oh no. And then when he started trying to take apart the turnbuckle, oh my God, I was thrilled. Like, just thrilling, this match.
It was an insane finish. It was so good.
Beautifully timed too.
Josh, before you get to your bit, I do want to shout out, we jumped over, there's a spot where Punk is on the top turnbuckle trying to suplex the Miz into a table to the outside, and Del Rio hits him with like a step up enziguri off the rope.
Yeah.
Like, he goes from the mat to kicking CM Punk in the face while CM Punk's standing on the third rope.
And he does it casually.
So smooth. He really walked so the Lucha Brothers could run.
It's true.
You know?
Yeah, and like...
That's some Rey Fénix shit for sure.
And it's too bad. And it's too bad about Alberto Del Rio being a real piece of shit. Because, like, you know, in this match, it's just kind of like... It's accentuated how good he was. And, like, you know, and him and Punk working together, like, they just had, like... Some wrestlers just have great chemistry together, and those two... Mm-hmm. Had it right, like, and again, it's too bad because there'd be some great matchups for Alberto and AEW, I feel, and like kind of still around, and like there's still like kind of meat on the bone there, but he's never gonna work again in any major promotion, so fuck him.
Yeah, no, like in the words of Bad Luck Fale, fuck him.
This got 3 2/3 bald heads. Thought this was a fantastic match. Definitely the match of the night. Great work put in by everybody. Great storytelling by everybody. Punk, being the smartest guy in the room, I think really carried him a lot in his WWE run. And yeah, the two handcuff spots really kind of highlighted that, right? They were, you know, they showed it's like, you know, it's like you think you've outsmarted Punk, but he's actually got the big brains in the room. So he like unscrewed the turnbuckle post and he got out of that, you know, and I think the supporting cast in this match was fantastic. Again, Ricardo Rodriguez in this match was fantastic. Took a crazy hell of a bump. Yeah, just a great overall kind of like main event, like a true main event to a pretty solid pay-per-view.
Yeah, I agree.
We like to close things off here with a little high spot and a botched spot. It's a couple of honorable mentions, something that we really, really liked, something that we did not care for quite so much. I think my botched spot, it's hard to tell, like, it's a toss up for me whether my botched spot is going to be the commentary team overall and just how confusing that was, or if it's going to be making a match in the middle of a pay-per-view that had no stakes and was just kind of boring and took up time. I really did not care for either of those. I think my high spot is the kind of like prophetic nature of that picture after the fact of like all of the champions coming out of this pay-per-view and that like ushering in of the new era. And that like when that went sort of like viral, like CM Punk retweeted it and he said, like, the new era, if you can't, what did he say? If you can't get behind this, you'll get left behind, I think is what he said.
Yeah.
In terms of like the champions being like CM Punk, Daniel Bryan, Cody Rhodes, Matt Cardona, Matt Sydal, Kofi Kingston, and Beth Phoenix, all of whom have, well, almost all of whom, you know, have really gone on to have really great success almost in spite of WWE. And I do think that like his statement of if you can't get behind this, you're going to get left behind, it like applies more so than anybody else to Vince McMahon as like WWE as the company who, like, you know, tried this, got cold feet, put the belts back on your John Cena's, your Randy Orton's, your Triple H's, time and time again have shied away from all of these people who are incredibly talented and really got like very naturally over with the crowd, and has led to a point where WWE does like currently feel like a bit of a relic. And like you have your AEWs coming up, you have your American independent scene of PWG and Ring of Honor, the return of the NWA. You've got like we've said time and time again this year of just like, I think the running tagline for 2021 is what a time to be a wrestling fan.
Totally.
And 2011, 2012 could have been that time. And this was almost it. You know, this was really, they were on the cusp of something and they just got cold feet.
It's a lot of promise. So, a lot of promise, right?
Like, yeah.
And again, it's disappointing to look back because that was the last real glimpse of, I think, any kind of hope, you know, me as a wrestling fan. And then, like, you know, we had a bunch of teases over the years. You know, it's like, you know, remember that big promo 2-3 years ago where all the McMahon family was in the ring? It's like, we hear you, you know, we hear you booing, yeah. You know, the ratings are down and yada, yada, yada. You know, they introduced the women's tag team titles. Fantastic. Look at the women's tag team titles now. And then really what else came out of that, right? Like honest to God, like they keep doing the same thing despite themselves. And I think, you know, this was the last real bastion of you know, hope for me as a fan of the people that I really liked and got behind. You know, the next night on Raw, I think Punk introduced, you know, himself, Daniel Bryan and Zack Ryder, and they all came to the ring, and it's like, you know, this is what it looks like, kind of to the same point, you know, as the Instagram post or whatever. And it was like, yeah, this is awesome. Like, this is exciting. Like, I'm excited to kind of get behind this. And unfortunately, they lost the memo somewhere along the way. Right. So.
Oh, so my high spot is the CM Punk handcuff work and escaping and, you know, winning and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
Just thrilling. Loved it. My botch spot is going to be just the whole treatment and the match with Big Show. I'm starting to get your vibe, Josh, about how the Big Show isn't actually a very good wrestler, but I have a lot of love for the Big Show, just a person or whatever.
Like who you like.
Paul White seems like the best.
He seems like a really lovely man.
Super,
yeah.
Super good dude. We had a great time watching the Big Show show. You know.
Yeah.
No
just
shade.
Like hokey. Yeah. Yeah. So I was not impressed with them selling me on this, like, he hasn't won in 9 years. Like, this is his moment. And then he wins. And it's like, but it's a really shitty match. And like a shitty, like, I think his fucking finisher of the big right hand is so anticlimactic and stupid. And I hated that, like, his hand had been worked the whole match. And then he still uses the big right hand. And it's just, that's the end of the match at that point, and it's over.
But
and then,
yeah, you couldn't have at least given it like he throws the hand, but he's like too hurt, and he takes too long to go for the cover, and Mark Henry kicks out, and he gets back up, and then he has to figure out something else to do to win it,
like fucking choke slam him or some other cool big man shit.
I did also wonder how much like that match was super short, specifically because Henry's foot was fucked up, and they were like trying to protect him.
Do you think it was really fucked up?
Maybe.
Huh.
Maybe.
Anyway, and then to just take away the win from Big Show in like 2 seconds when he's unconscious from a chair shot,
yeah,
was just like, it was such a shitty thing to do to Show. I don't know.
Show deserves better.
Yeah.
My high spot of the night was, I think, the entirety of the main event. So everybody involved. I talk about this a lot, kind of like what we're talking about the match. But, you know, Punk, Del Rio, Miz, Ricardo, I think everybody did such a great job kind of like being their character, hitting their spots, a lot of cool spots in the match, great storytelling. I thought it was just a really solidly constructed match, right? Like, I thought just kind of execution-wise and everything like that, everybody in that match did a great job. My low spot of the night, for sure, botch spot, the Booker T, Cody running angle throughout the night, ridiculous. It didn't make any sense to me why he kept on getting attacked. And then the fact that he kept on getting attacked and there was no real payoff to that. Like, I know you mentioned earlier, Lauren, where it was like he was kind of looking off in the distance. That's not really selling it, right? Like, that's not really,
yeah.
You know, like, it was just, the whole thing was kind of stupid to me. And, like, I think they needed to just, like, fill some time. They could have gave that to the women for the women's match. You know, like, there's, like, so many other things you can do, you know, with the time. I think the 20 minutes total you spent telling that weird story throughout the pay-per-view. Anyway, that
they could have, they... They could have put that entire 20 minutes towards Sheamus versus Jack Swagger.
give them like an Iron Man match.
Yeah.
It's like, you guys got a problem backstage. The only way to settle this is an Iron Man match right now. Pay-per-view. But anyway, that was my high and low.
Nice. To quote Mark Henry, there's been enough talk.
Yay.
But if you out there in Radio Land want to continue the conversation, you got any thoughts, can hit us up. We're at facebook.com/stonecoldshots. We're on Instagram. We're on Twitter, Stone Cold Shots Pod or Stone Cold Shots Podcast. Check us out there.
You can leave us a rating and review on your wrestling podcast app of choice.
Give us those five bald heads. Yeah, it'll never happen a real match. I don't think. And again,
show Josh how it's done.
That said, I don't know how to do it. I'm too dumb to figure out how to give a match five bald heads. But maybe you out there in the Stone Cold Shots universe can figure out how to rate this 5 stars.
Yeah.
Happy holidays to everybody out there listening. Even if you're listening to this later and it's not the holidays, I want you to have a happy holiday in May. Or June.
or if you're listening.
Hell, even July.
And if you're listening, if it's all the way next December, remember you can't talk shit about Big Show during the month of December. So just remember that. No shit talking Big Show. And then for everybody else, oh, ho, 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 Merry Christmas.